And good afternoon, good afternoon, good afternoon. Wednesday, August the 22nd, 2018, 13 minutes past the hour. You're tuned into the Now program. Scott Spears along with you here in hour number two. And we want to thank Heloise, the maven of helpful hints, for being on in hour number one. Now, coming up Friday, don't forget this, from 11, 10 in the morning until 1 in the afternoon for our weekly roundtable roundup of weekly events, we're going to be joined in studio by 40th Treasurer of the United States, Mary Ellen Withrow, under President Bill Clinton. She served as Treasurer of the United States. She'll be live in studio with all of us Friday, recounting the week that was, and we know she is the treasurer for the Rich Cordray campaign for governor, so it'll be interesting to talk with her and see how that's going, and talk about a week that is not over yet. It's only Wednesday. It's only the middle of the week, and because of everything that happened yesterday, holy moly, between 4 and 5 p.m. Eastern time, one of the most eventful days in the history of news, period. It's just unbelievable. And a person who's going to help sort all this out, because it's somewhat confusing, nobody better to do that than a good friend of this program, reporter and author for The Daily Beast, panelist on the McLaughlin Group, Eleanor Cliff. Eleanor, what a day yesterday.
Yes, it was a double whammy, and I guess depending on your perspective, you're thinking that some people are getting justice handed down correctly, and if you're in President Trump's camp, he still maintains this is a witch hunt. But that's a very difficult position to hold when you look at these indictments. And Paul Manafort, I'm sure the president is saying, well, they weren't able to come to a decision on 10 of the charges, so they only got him on 8 of the charges, so Manafort came out ahead. Not the case. Manafort is looking at serious jail time, and it may persuade him to cooperate with the special counsel in order to lessen the charges that he faces. And he's also going to be in another trial that gets underway in the District of Columbia next month. So Manafort is in severe personal danger. But his trial did not link to the president, and so the president is correct when he kept saying, no collusion, no collusion, where's the Russia conclusion? It's about Manafort. But Manafort was in a key position and presumably knows information that he might want to share once he comes to grip with the dire future that he faces. And even more interesting than the Manafort trial, however, was the stepping forward of Michael Cohen, once the president's personal lawyer, to plead guilty, I think, is it to 8 counts? Or maybe I have the number 8 fixed in my mind, a number of counts. And he specifically linked illegal campaign donations and payments to a person who was running for federal office. He did not mention President Trump's name, but that's clearly who he was talking about. And so, in effect, he makes the president an unindicted co-conspirator, which is language that was heard initially during the Nixon years, and that was what President Nixon was termed before he was urged to leave office to avoid impeachment. So, I mean, my feeling is that the legal walls are really closing in on this president, and frankly, I find it a little scary as to what he might do to relieve the pressure that he's under. A, that he might finally still resort to somehow getting rid of Robert Mueller, you know, firing enough Justice Department officials until he finds someone willing to fire the special counsel. I think that's still a problem, and they've been reacting on Capitol Hill with basically some bipartisanship, but it's mostly Democrats wanting to pass legislation that would protect the Mueller investigation. And then second, what this president is a master of distraction and what he might do to distract from his legal woes, or distract the media and the public from his legal woes. Then you get into, you know, what he can do nationally or internationally. And I think we're in a time here that I thought I would only kind of thing I would only read about in history books or political fiction or science fiction. It's an extraordinary circumstance that we're living through, with an apparently really angry and I think it's fair to say an impetuous and seemingly unstable president who is really threatened that his election and his presidency might not be seen as legitimate.
Yesterday, the entire Trump presidency, there had been talk, there had been, you know, rumor and that sort of thing. But yesterday, I think the something got started, and I'm not sure where we're off to now. Now, the Manafort thing, I was reading a newspaper this morning, and essentially the headline was, "Cooperate with Mueller, pardon by Trump, or life in prison." Are the chances... I would guess they would have to be pretty good that Trump might be thinking about this, certainly.
Yes, I do think a pardon there is quite possible. And because they didn't link the convictions directly to the president, you can't automatically say that the president is committing obstruction of justice, you know, to prevent the probe from reaching him, although I think that's probably what it's about. But you know, I think he could probably get away with that. The other thing is, though, I think Mueller has probably backstopped Manafort in some way, that if the president pardons him, that he could still face issues on the state level. I don't know that for a fact, but I mean, when you look at what's happening with Michael Cohen, he's facing, you know, New York state charges as well as federal charges. So I think, you know, Manafort is not, he doesn't have very many good options. And if you, I mean, he's I think 69 years old. Probably his best option is to cooperate, unless he really believes or has gotten enough signals that a pardon from this president is going to come through. So I think he's going to wait it out a little bit, but his next trial gets underway in September in Washington, D.C., and I think, you know, this is the come to Jesus moment for Paul Manafort as to what he does next.
Well, if I'm Paul Manafort, knowing what I know yesterday, if the president is not communicating to me that he's going to give me a pardon, I would think you're going to cooperate. But then if you're the president, you've got to think, if I don't pardon him now, he might start cooperating. So it's a very confusing moment. Because he doesn't want to go to prison for the rest
like
of
a game. It's like a game of chicken, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah,
yeah.
Because he doesn't want to go to prison for the rest of his life.
No, I imagine that the lawyers all talk to each other. So I imagine his lawyers are feeling out Mueller, maybe, what he might potentially have to offer up, and how much time off he would get from his likely sentence. I think it's an easier case to make with Michael Cohen, because the charges that Cohen pled guilty to yesterday, I think they add up to something like 3 to 5 years in prison. Now, he doesn't want to do that, but by cooperating, he could probably get one of those, you know, 6-month deals and community service. So he has a real incentive cooperate with Mueller. Manafort, the charge, you know, bank fraud and all that, those those are long prison sentences. So how much, how much does he have to offer up, and how much is Mueller willing to chip away at what he would be facing? And I, you know, so those are the two unknowns. And I think those lawyers communicate with each other. I don't know that for a fact, but how did they arrive at the deal with Michael Cohen? they were talking with each other, and I'm sure each side sends out their feelers in the Manafort case too. And I don't know where the president's lawyers fit in. Would Giuliani be talking to Manafort's attorney? I somehow think that crosses a line. I don't know exactly why I think that. I'm not a lawyer, but and then Giuliani is the sort of the show lawyer, but the president has some real lawyers too working for him, who are trying to figure out what's in his best interest. So this is a legal drama, and I don't think there's going to be a Perry Mason moment exactly, but this is going to be unspooling certainly up until the midterms. And there is this belief that Mueller is going to respect an unwritten Justice Department rule that you don't make public moves on sensitive investigations through the 60 days leading up to an election, which essentially means if Mueller's going to step forward with any more indictments, he's got to do it in the next, really, before Labor Day, in the next 10 days or so, or else he's got to go silent until after the elections. And the elections are going to tell us a lot about what kind of moves everybody's going to make next. If the Democrats do take the House and potentially even the Senate, which is a much tougher challenge, then Mueller would be looking at delivering a report to a House that would be favorably inclined to act and file impeachment charges. And the president would then feel additionally cornered, and he could conceivably then do what he's been wanting to do all along, which is the mass firings. That would be destructive on his part, but he started this whole thing by firing James Comey, and Steve Bannon was right. He's the former aide in the White House, former strategist. He basically said that you fire Jim Comey, you're inviting impeachment proceedings, and it's been a kind of a slow dance to that ever since, because the firing of Comey and Comey's comments after that basically, set up the whole notion of obstruction of justice, and I think that's the charge that this president would be facing.
Before we leave Paul Manafort, there's something that is interesting to me. Now, it would not be obstruction of justice if the president did pardon him, but would that be the straw that breaks the camel's back with the Republican Congress as far as impeachment goes? Could they get away with letting that go by and doing nothing?
Boy, that's a very good question. I'm afraid they could. I think he would have to have more pardons so that you could actually say there's a pattern of obstruction of justice, or else all those Republicans who are facing re-election, if they don't have the Trump base, who do they have? I mean, the Republican Party has basically lost its identity. And so they're terrified of alienating the Trump voters. And they will try to believe what the president is saying, that Manafort, this was a bad behavior of his own over a long period of time, only worked for the president a short amount of time, as he keeps saying, and it has nothing to do with the Trump campaign or the Trump. You know, I think there's probably more there that has to do with the Trump campaign. This is kind of just the initial salvo. But I'm not sure if pardoning Manafort would sway the really hardcore people who support the president. I think it will add to the queasiness that Republicans face on Capitol Hill. But the one thing, I think, that would really knock the pins out from under the Republican support would be an effort to remove Mueller. I do think that has all the echoes of the Saturday night massacre, and I think Republicans would see that as a red line. And if the president crosses that, I think I think that would end the Republican support and definitely initiate impeachment.
Eleanor, correct me if I'm wrong. Now, this is my understanding of why yesterday was historic. Now, Bill Clinton was impeached, but he survived. Richard Nixon resigned, was never impeached. And there's a lot of similarities drawn between Donald Trump and Richard Nixon in the last 24 hours. But it's my understanding what Michael Cohen did yesterday by basically saying that the president ordered him to break the law. Now, Nixon, he ordered the cover-up. So, yes, Nixon did break the law, but there was never any evidence that I ever saw that Nixon really knew about the break-in at the Watergate Hotel. He did order the cover-up of it, but he didn't really want the break.
He didn't. You're right. He didn't know about the break-in, but he had basically let it be known that he, by creating the plumber's unit, which was designed to plug leaks but went on to, do dirty tricks, and by basically, authorizing Haldeman and Ehrlichman to deputize Chuck Colson to do dirty tricks, he ordered this kind of behavior. Now, they turned it into amateur hour and they screwed up. And if he had just stepped forward then and said, this is terrible, this is not anything I ever intended, that would be a lie, of course, but he that would have been the end of it. Instead, he went through extraordinary lengths with the cover-up, subverting the FBI and, doing all kinds of things and implicating dozens of people in the administration. I don't remember the count anymore, but a lot of people went to jail.
Because
of Watergate.
Well, and I think the difference was, and maybe this is, but I remember reading Nixon's memoir, and I think he wrote that he thought he could survive John Dean's testimony, but the problem was all the things that he did, breaking into Ellsberg's psychiatrist's office and auditing people. What actually happened yesterday, though, was Trump ordered Cohen to break the law. And if Trump was not president, he would have been indicted yesterday. Nixon, if he wasn't the president, couldn't have ordered the cover-up. He was a sitting president when that all happened. And he would not have been indicted for what eventually ended his term. Trump did something. He actually ordered, according to Michael Cohen, and I would believe it's true because the U.S. attorneys took it at that, ordered a crime. Is that right?
Yeah, I like your thinking, but, we are in a somewhat different time, and where Cohen implicated the president was in paying off women. So the people who support Trump long ago made their peace with him and women. Maybe some of them think it's even terrific the way he could hang around with porn stars or whatever. That, I mean, even the evangelical Christians have made their peace with that because they like his court appointments. And second, when you say campaign, it's a campaign violation, campaign finance violation, I mean, the White House has already come back with, The Obama campaign had to pay a fine after, so what's the big deal? Well, the Obama campaign, I forget whether it was in 08 or 12, but it's in the news. After an audit was done, they paid some sort of fine for a technical violation. It's very different from what the president is being accused of. But that's going to be the White House defense. Basically, you know, women, everybody knew this president wasn't a saint. And two, campaign finance violations, everybody does that, no big deal. And then third, now they've got to really, I guess they've got to slime Michael Cohen, basically saying he's a liar, he lied before, and he's lied now. And I must say, Lanny Davis, who's a huge Hillary supporter and a big-time Democrat who is representing Cohen now, is trying to make the case that Cohen is flipped because, you know, he's a super patriot and he wasn't comfortable with the president's performance at Helsinki. And they've now set up a website. I have not visited it yet. I'll bet every reporter has been visiting it. I'm not quite sure what the purpose of the website is. It's to help Michael tell the truth. Is it to contribute money? I'm not sure how that works, but maybe Cohen is in need of money now, but it's hard to feel sorry for someone who lived at the level he did and cashed in on, you know, taxi medallions when they were big, and to now feel like you want to contribute to his defense fund. So, you know, again, you can't make this stuff up. And now, you know, Michael Cohen joins the cast with Stormy Daniels and others, you know, trying to puncture the balloon around this president. I guess he joins the cast with Stormy Daniels and Omarosa, and maybe the author who wrote Fire and Fury the first time out. Anyway, there's a long list of people who've been trying to pull back the veil on this White House, and you know what they reveal is something we all kind of knew, but it remains shocking.
It's my understanding now. We all rely on this idea that you can't indict a sitting president, but that's not in the Constitution. That was just something that people have abided by. But if the Congress is not doing what they should be doing, because it's my understanding that this would be considered a high crime and a misdemeanor, what President Trump is being accused of by his former attorney. If they don't do impeachment strictly for political reasons, is there a possibility that there could be an indictment? There's no law that says you can't.
Right. And in fact, well, the Constitution basically envisioned impeachment as the way to remedy a president who acts improperly, and that it would be up to a majority of the House of Representatives to decide what are high crimes and misdemeanors. And during the Clinton presidency, the famous Ken Starr investigation, one of his attorneys did write an article basically explaining how a president should be able to be indicted. So that remains in dispute among legal scholars. It would not really be up to Mueller. It would be up. Mueller turns his report over to the Justice Department. He doesn't give it directly to Congress. He doesn't make any decisions about what should be done next. He may make recommendations, but the decision is up to Rod Rosenstein, who is overseeing the investigation, and he's a career public official, and even though the president has suggested he's in cahoots with Democrats, I believe he's been a lifelong Republican. But that, anyway, it would be his decision, and I think they'd have to think long and hard before you indicted a sitting president, and they'd have to really look at what Mueller comes up with and decide it's not really that it goes beyond politics. It goes beyond partisan politics, and that it has to be dealt with. We're not there yet. But so I think for the White House to reassure itself, saying, "Well, there's no way that they'll indict, that they'll subpoena a sitting president or indict a sitting president," I think they're, you know, what's the old, they're whistling past the graveyard. I guess that would be what they're doing.
Is there any chance, with what we know from Michael Cohen yesterday, that if the Democrats do take the House, which most people are saying that's what's going to happen, is there any chance they don't vote to impeach, even if the Mueller report comes back with nothing, which is hard to believe at this point, that they don't impeach him?
I think, you know, Nancy Pelosi and the seasoned Democrats in the House do not want to just launch into impeachment proceedings. They feel that they would like to, you know, show that they're going to use their majority to pass things that affect the American people, you know, immigration reform, health plan, even though it would all be vetoed if it got to the White House, if they have to show their chops on issues. But I do think that, you know, if they take back the House, there are going to be a lot of, you know, progressives there, and the wanting to go ahead with impeachment proceedings would be at a fever pitch. And members of Congress would then draft articles, and they would vote on them. But then the House Judiciary Committee would have hearings. I mean, there is a process. And so it's one reason that it would be good to keep on. Jerry Nadler, New York congressman, would head the judiciary. He would chair the Judiciary Committee. He's been around for a while, too. So there are some cooler heads that would not want to just rush into that and make it look like it was just a, you know, as Trump would put it, a political coup. I mean, they'd have to be very careful about it. And it would be a fool's errand if you can't get 67 votes in the Senate. Now, I don't know what kind of a Senate we're going to have, but whichever party ends up in control, there'd be a long way to go to 67. So you'd want to be pretty sure that whatever comes out builds a strong enough case that you could get that kind of super majority. I think just initiating impeachment proceedings because it makes you feel good is not smart. And I hope the Democrats, if they do win control, and especially if they win control narrowly, they've really got to be careful with that. It's like nitroglycerin.
The president's tweet this morning, and he let loose with a few tweets, but the one from 4 hours ago, I can't quite figure out. The tweet is, "If anyone is looking for a good lawyer, I would strongly suggest that you don't retain the services of Michael Cohen." Now, I get what he's saying, but he's not denying that what happened yesterday happened. I haven't seen him deny that yet. And is he trying to be funny, flip, trash? I don't even, what does that mean?
Well, I think it's his way of saying that Cohen just screwed him. Yep. If you want loyalty from a lawyer, and if you want a lawyer who's going to really, you know, protect you, he's not your man. I mean, actually, that's a pretty restrained way for Trump to tweet, considering how furious he must be. But I don't, you know, he's not entirely rational. Did you catch any of the rally last night in West Virginia?
I talked
about his mother and how she cooked a turkey for 8 hours or something. I mean, he spoke for over an hour. He just rambles from here to there. And somebody emailed me and said he remembered Nixon in the final days sort of going on about his sainted, I think, Quaker mother. So anyway, it's he's before these crowds. They love him. You know, whatever he says, goes over well with them, and he basks in that, and then he thinks that that's the real world, and that those are the people out there, and you know they're being thwarted by the elites, and I just listened to part of the rally, and he says, you know, you are the elites, you know, you're the important people, not these other people who call themselves the elites. I mean, I haven't noticed a lot of people calling themselves elites. I mean, it's not a word anybody really is fond of these days.
No, you wouldn't.
But, you know, he's stream of consciousness, and that's what's fascinating about him. You know, with Nixon, we had to rely on everything coming from behind the scenes. With Trump, I mean, he's kind of put everything out there in plain sight, and you figure if he's putting it out there in plain sight, then then Giuliani makes the case, well, it can't really be obstruction if he's doing it in plain sight, but it is, and he can't help himself. He always kind of telegraphs where he's going. So and the security clearances, which he first talked about a couple of weeks ago, I think that's another thing that happened just in the last several days that has unsettled, I don't know, maybe I'll use his word, elite Washington, just the people who, you know, act by certain norms and so forth. I mean, a president who strips security clearances because he doesn't like what people are saying and they're not friends of his administration is a very authoritarian move.
Well, it's interesting. The president will be in Columbus Friday at the big fundraising dinner for the Republicans here in Ohio. I don't know how that's going to go over with all the week's news. I assume it'll go over okay. But, you know, the Michael Cohen allegation, the thing about it that I hear all the surrogates out this morning saying that Michael Cohen can't be trusted and he's a felon now and so on and so forth, but I haven't heard the president deny it.
What part of what Cohen said could he deny? It's kind of common sense. I mean, again, it's something we knew all along that these women were paid off, and that was probably done with Trump's knowledge and his direction. If he denied that, like he has in the past, when in Air Force One, when he was questioned about it and all that, but now it's such an obvious, he's saying, "Trust me, not Cohen." But he knows he's not telling the truth. So to counter Cohen at this point would just invite further scrutiny of the president, because I think it's pretty clear that not that Cohen is the most trustworthy person in the world, but his version of the truth when it comes to payments to women sounds a lot more plausible than Trump saying he knew nothing about it.
Well, in the middle of all this, we do have an election coming up, and the DNC has called the FBI after detecting an attempt to hack its voter database, and it's still going on. Is it going to happen again in November? Is anything being done?
Well, it's fascinating. The Microsoft chairman, I think he came out and said they found all of these fake sites, you know, mimicking conservative think tanks and so forth. So, yeah, I mean, I think they're working it pretty aggressively, and the Republican Congress has voted down any attempt to add more money for election security. And you know, it's difficult because we don't have like one federal system. I mean, every state, every locality kind of has its own rules. And, I mean, you know that in Ohio, the Secretary of State makes the decisions, and then the Diebold voting machines were questioned, and the allegiance of the chairman of that company was questioned after John Kerry lost Ohio and enabled George President Bush to win re-election. So, and I think the Russians with that, which Fancy Bear, which is apparently the entity that's behind this, I mean, they have figured out that it's pretty easy to get into all these various states and municipalities. And, yes, I mean, I think they're doing everything they want to do. And it's clear that they, again, they seem to favor Republicans and Trump and that sort of thing. So, but I think, you know, everybody should be worried about this. And I think it's very I don't know. It's inappropriate that this administration has not shown any urgency towards, you know, protecting our electoral system. And you can't help but conclude it's because they think that it benefits them to some extent.
You know, Eleanor, we've talked about this before, but this is where we're getting. After yesterday, I believe anything can happen. So this is what bothers me. Yesterday, Tuesday, the DNC was being hacked again, or attempted to be hacked again, by some Russian interference to get into their think tank, get a hold of their voter rolls. Now, this is happening 2 years after we are completely aware that they interfered in the last election. The last indictment showed us that they hacked into the voter rolls in 39 states. Now, I don't know how far they know the way to win elections. Whoever wins the most votes in the most states in the Electoral College, that's how you win. Back when we did not have any, people weren't aware at all in 2016. The president was, and Mitch McConnell was, but we weren't. The people weren't aware of it. Are we getting more to the point where votes could have been changed? Votes might be changed coming up in this election.
Well, you know, the president and his allies and a lot of people actually on both sides of the aisle have said, well, there's no evidence that any votes were actually changed. Well, I don't know quite how they actually know that. And number two, assuming they're doing the same thing this time, that their goal is likely to change votes. And so, you know, I think we should be prepared for that. And what the Microsoft, the chairman of Microsoft, who came out and said, you know, we know that they hacked into this country and that they hacked into every presidential candidate in France. And I remember in the closing days of the last week or so, at France, what did they do? Did they shut down all of the sites, or they didn't report on it, or they had, I can't remember exactly what they did, but they took some measure to discredit what they saw was the clear hacking. The thing is, in this country, you have a large part of the population that has no idea how this stuff works, and I'd put myself not quite in that group, but close to it. And so how you control this, how you make people aware of what's going on. I mean, it's a huge public education task, and I don't know that you can completely guard against all of this, but I do know that we should be doing a lot more than we are doing, and that, you know, the White House has kind of ostentatiously removed the high-level person who was overseeing cybersecurity. They really don't seem to have taken all of this stuff seriously. And you still have the president being somewhat skeptical that Russia is behind this. In the last several days, he's been talking about how China, they're the ones who are really hacking into our systems. Now, I do believe China does that, yes. But they're more interested in sort of espionage that has to do with trade secrets, manufacturing things. I don't think they're necessarily interested in affecting our voting system. they're more interested in sort of secrets they can use to further their own advantages at home in terms of what they produce and they innovate and they copy and that sort of thing. I think that's that their interest is very different. But the president is clearly trying to distract from the Russia part and saying, oh, lots of other countries do it. Look at China. You know, he wants everybody to say, nothing to see here with Russia. Let's look over here at China. That's his approach.
Well, the thing that bothers me about this, and it is, you know, the Facebook thing, okay, it wasn't right that that happened, but that's not changing any votes. Did it change minds? Maybe it did, but we don't know that it changed any votes. But when you hack into 39 states, that there's only 11 that you didn't hack into the voter rolls. 500,000 people's information was compromised. You don't hack into the voter rolls to send goofy information. You hack in there to do something more nefarious. And when the election is only won by 70,000 votes in three states, I just don't know. I hope that didn't happen, but if it did, boy, it's going to be a bad day for this country.
Well, it was almost like that was a training exercise. I mean, now they have a good understanding of how our electoral college votes works, and there are only a handful of states that you really need to pay attention to. And you're in one of them. I think that's what, if you wanted to protect our electoral system, you'd really have to focus on your infrastructure in the particular swing states that could make a difference. And I must say, Lenny Davis, again, now Michael Cohen's lawyer, on TV, he's been suggesting that Cohen might have information about how much Trump knew in advance of what the Russians were going to offer in terms of Hillary. And I think the way Lenny Davis put it, whether the president knew in advance about the hacking that they did into the DNC system and John Podesta, the chairman of the DNC and the chairman of the Hillary campaign, what the president knew about that in advance and whether he was cheering it on. And as Davis put it, he cheered it on in public. What we want to know is, did he cheer it on in private? In other words, did he have discussions with Russians? Now that, you know, again, we're all waiting for the smoking gun. That, you know, if that came out, if Cohen could document that and if others corroborated it, I mean, that would be very serious business.
A couple weeks ago, we had Professor Alan Lichtman on the show, and first of all, he's predicted every presidential election for the last 30 years, and he's written the book, The Case for the Impeachment of Trump. But he said, when he was on the program a couple weeks ago, he said has not ruled out that votes were changed, and he also said it would not surprise him if Hillary Clinton, if that were known, if votes were changed, had a legal team ready to go, because there is precedent in this country for overturning an election without holding it again if votes were changed, I believe is what he said.
That he thought that Hillary would have a lawsuit ready to go?
Yeah, if votes were changed, and he said that's not out of the question yet. That there is a precedent.
Prove that.
Yeah, that there is a precedent in governor races, congressional races, that you could make a case that if the electoral votes were cast under false pretense, that you could have an election overturned. That there's no law that would say that. That you couldn't do that.
I don't know. I don't know if there's any precedent in the presidential level, and I'd like to see the precedent that he's talking about on the state. Did he go into any specifics? Because that would be interesting. Because I think the feeling is that there's really no way to undo this.
Well, I think what he said, I'd have to go back and listen to it again, but I think what he said was, It was only if votes were physically changed, if that was found out, because in mayor and governor and congressional races, when votes had been messed with or something had happened in the past, that there you can overturn an election. Now, I think there'd be
Yeah, but maybe in the period where they're counting votes or it's close or, I mean, 2 years in, I mean, it does seem a crime that there's not a way to remedy this, but I think the way attitudes are going to play out have to do with the Kavanaugh confirmation. The fact that the Republicans are trying to confirm a lifetime Supreme Court judge on the basis of 50 Republican votes, while you have the president's legitimacy really being questioned and having the president under serious legal fire, that just seems not right. So it may still happen, but there are certain rules that we abide by, and it's hard for me to see how you could overturn the election and somehow have Hillary Clinton come back into play. I don't see that happening.
I guess the thought in his mind, Professor Lichtman, was how could you let an election stand where the person who won, by the definition of how we win elections, just be done.
I've been calling him President Asterisk. I think that's the only way. For now, I think that's what we're dealing with.
Well, it's interesting because I think the end result is fascinating because Nixon, again, we don't know that he ordered the break-in, and McGovern didn't have a chance in the world of winning that election. So there wasn't that kind of feeling here. And two Supreme Court justices, one that was held up under a Democratic president, happened because of this election. You know, I keep hearing this, elections have consequences. I think that's going to be a big reason for people to bring litigation. I think I can't imagine that would go by if votes were changed and people just said, well, okay, he needs to go and we'll just go along with business as is.
Right. I just wonder, how would we come up with the evidence that votes were changed at this point? President's not going to authorize a 2016 electoral commission to look into anything. I think, individual states are generally pretty private about releasing their voting records. And, that ridiculous commission that the president did authorize to find out about fraudulent voting had just kind of ended because they really couldn't find anything. So I think I don't know how you would come up with the evidence that was so incontrovertible that it would force a reexamination of the election two or three years in.
I guess I wonder how Mueller got the information that they hacked into 39 states' voter rolls and 500,000 people's information. There's something there.
Is Mueller the one who released that? No, doesn't that come from the intelligence?
That was Mueller. That was
intelligence community.
That was Mueller in.
Mueller doesn't release anything, does he?
Well, that was in one of the indictments.
Oh, I see. Okay, yeah. All right.
So he's got some.
But I think that's got to be from the intelligence community.
Right. So I don't know what they have. I'd like to know how they knew that, and.
That's a very good, question.
Yeah. So it's strange, but before we part, Eleanor, the question I wanted to ask, your best bet, you've been in Washington a long time, reporter for a long time. Do you think we'll see the Mueller investigation before the election, or is it going to be after the first of the year?
I doubt they're going to have come to a conclusion by the end of the, because we're only a week from the election, or 10 days or whatever, from the start of the election season. And then I think Mueller is going to be reluctant to do anything. I think we're, you know, and then you're into the holidays. I think it's next year. But, yeah, I don't know. I'm just guessing.
It's going to be interesting.
I think there's a lot of work to do. You know, they're only just now getting access to all of the documents and the recordings they got from Michael Cohen's office and his home, because they had a separate judge that was empowered to go through all that to see what, you know, what was part of attorney-client privilege. And I believe that judge has just completed that work. So the Mueller team would just be getting those documents. And that's got to be a treasure trove. Mm-hmm.
It's going to be an interesting few months, this lead up to this election. Now, we might not have the Mueller report, who's to say, but the Cohen tapes, whatever he's going to do, what is Manafort going to do, another trial set for September. Boy, between now and then, who knows what's going to happen.
Right.
Well,
I hear you.
Eleanor, it's always a pleasure to talk to you, and I hope we can talk again soon, because who knows what's going to happen. Here in Ohio, in a district I live in, we just had a Democrat in a race too close to call that never happens. So O'Connor and Boulderson.
Well, is that with that was Danny O'Connor?
Yeah. And I talked to the Democratic chairman yesterday, David Pepper, here in Ohio, and he says they're probably just not going to resolve it because they're both on the ballot for November anyway.
Right, no, exactly.
So here we go. I don't know.
Okay.
What'll happen. Thanks, Eleanor. It's always a pleasure to talk to you.
All right. Sure. Thank you.
Bye-bye. And that's all the time we have for today. Hope you learned something, and I hope you come back tomorrow. For this day, Scott Spears heading for the dugout.
The WWGH Radio prize policy is as follows. You have 10 days from the day you win the prize to up. You can earn once every 30 days,